Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we are at Baltimore Comic Con talking to one of our favorite guys.
Yes.
I feel like we checked in with you 2 years ago, also at Baltimore Comic Con, Philip Kennedy Johnson.
What's
welcome.
Up, guys? Always a pleasure.
Oh, man.
Always love talking to you. You got so much going on.
Yeah, so excited.
Thanks, guys.
Hold on. Before you jump into it, Pete, I did want to ask you about the con. What has it been like for you so far?
This show? I mean, it's my home show. It's awesome. Like, I live half an hour from here. It's awesome to come to this. Yeah, and it's so cool that the show that is so close to me is also one of the true, like, comic conventions where it's all about love of the game, love of the medium, and there's still, like, celebrity stuff happening, but it's not overwhelming at all. It's mostly about creators and the books they're making and the stories they're telling, the art they're putting out. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's got a great artist alley. They still have comics here, which is great. It's a blast. I agree with you, but I can't contain myself because I'm so excited to talk about Hulk. We got, like, such a huge reveal in the last issue. You've been killing it, doing amazing stuff. I've been losing my shit. What can you tell us about this new Infernal Hulk? Like, we only got to see the fist, a giant fist, if you will.
Yeah, if you will. Yeah, no, it's, man, I cannot wait for you to see this next issue, dude. Like, Infernal Hulk number one is the best issue of the series so far. Nick's art is looking more and more like Bernie Wrightson from, like, issue to issue. Like, what's coming next? There's so much ink on the page, so much violence on the page. It's Hulk's power set because of the issue of the events of issue 30 that we just saw.
Dude, like, can we talk about, like, the fact that we saw Banner getting ripped out of the Hulk, like, my young...
By the way, I'm going to put a very belated spoiler warning here. Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Pete.
My young, like, nerd brain couldn't believe what I was seeing. Like, I was shocked because I don't think I've ever seen anything like that, and it's been a long time for Hulk, so that's new and exciting, but also just so gross and scary.
Yeah, like, right?
It was a real roller coaster of emotions.
Oh,
how
man.
Was it for you?
Oh, my God. It was so great. When I saw that page, I was like, that page is going to... If Nick ever has kids, this page is paying for their college. Like, this is so fucking good. And, like, when we see the Mother of Horrors, and that's another two-page spread, and she looks just as bad as I wanted her to. And,
oh, my God.
Man, I will say some fans have been making some false assumptions about what they saw in that issue.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
People are talking about, well, we've been waiting for the Mother of Horrors all this time, and she's dead. And, like, I never said she's dead.
Like, ooh, nice.
And the fact
good
that...
to know.
And there's stuff in the back matter of issues 28 and 29. There's some stuff in there. It's like basically the origin of the Mother of Horrors, where she comes from, how it ties in with the history of the Marvel Universe. And there's stuff in there from her origins that is extremely impactful on what we're seeing now in Hulk. Yeah. So if anyone's freaking out, like, oh, we've been building up to Mother of Horrors all this time, now it's just over. It's not over. Yeah. Like, it's...
Buckle up.
What Mother of Horrors... Like, the Mother of Horrors is herself this seed of corruption. And because of the issues that... Because of what we see in issue 30, the seed of corruption didn't just die. Mm-hmm. You know? Now it's been consumed by someone else.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, and not to get too in weeds of the structure, but I was very curious about the pages that follow the reveal of Mother of Horrors, which show a descending size series of panels of Hulk, who has been taken over by Eldest, eating the Mother of Horrors. What is that like on the scripting end, or are you just telling Nick Klein to go hog wild?
That was the one page where I left it really open, because I had a layout in mind for Nick on that page, but all that really matters, again, apologies, if you've not read this issue yet, please, please read it before you continue. We see All that matters is that by the end of these pages, we understand that Hulk is consuming the flesh of the Mother of Horrors, and that, you know, that's all we need to see. And how Nick communicated that is, like, really up to him, like, as far as the panel layout and all that. So, that's the one page where we kind of cut him loose. It's like, do whatever you think. And he showed us a layout, and like, that looks awesome, and he just went nuts.
Now, I need to geek out about the art a little bit, because these pages have been insane. Like, as a fan of Hulk, I've seen things I've never seen before. How are you, what's it been like to just kind of be like, hey, can you draw something, like, give me this, and just to see those pages come back? I mean, I would want to put posters of every panel and put them on my wall.
I
mean,
right, I know.
It's so great.
Nick has already had a legendary career, but Hulk is the best work he's ever done, and he'll tell you that. And issue 30 was the best issue he's ever done until Infernal Hulk number 1, which is even better. It's just stupid. He's just getting so much better all the time right in front of us. He's just becoming a legend. So we talk, like, almost every day as far as what's going to be in the issue, what's going to be on the pages, and he understands that. I mean, I do scripts. I give a lot of direction in the scripts, but he understands that I'm just telling him a story so that he can tell a story. Like, these are not commands. It's like, I basically try to write down what I'm envisioning, and then Nick basically changes whatever he wants to suit his style the best.
Have there been, like, a favorite moment for you of, like, you send off a script and you get back, like, a couple of panels where you're just like, I know I told him to do this, but it's still, like, melting my mind what I got back.
Oh, man. What's a good... That would be... The one where I just, like, laughed like a little kid was issue 6. Yeah. Like, where... That's the War Devil arc.
The
Ghost Rider 44.
Oh, yes!
That first transformation.
Oh, yeah! Like, dude, that was unbelievable.
It's crazy. Like, he just runs out into the desert. And I did ask for that stuff on the page, like you said, but when it comes back, and it's like, you see his face is stretching, and you see Hulk, like, pushing out from the inside. It's like, oh, my God, it's so gross, and it just looked so gnarly. By far the gnarliest transformation we've ever seen. And he's done stuff since then that's even worse, but... I don't know, my heart still clings to that one page where I was like, damn, I just can't believe how hard he went. And we're finding new ways to do that now.
That's awesome.
Because, I mean, as we see, like, Infernal Hulk and Banner are not in the same body now. So, like, we got to find new ways to get that done. Because up till now, we've always tried to have a big transformation across two pages. Now we got to scratch that same body horror itch in different kind of ways now, and we're doing that. So, like, as we said, Hulk's power set is now changed. Mm-hmm. That one whole side of his body is just like scar tissue.
Yeah.
And that side of his body can do stuff that Hulk couldn't do. Like, that seed of corruption is in him now.
I had a question off of that, just because I feel like I've seen some misinformation online about this.
Uh-huh.
Some people have assumed Hulk is dead. Hulk is not... dead, right? Just been transformed in some way?
Hulk is not dead. Hulk has been transformed.
All right.
Yeah, like I've been describing Infernal Hulk. People have asked about, there are people out there that really, like, deeply care about the alters, like who's controlling the body at any given time.
Right.
And I think I said on the show, I was like, I don't really care so much about that. Like, these are all just excuses for writers to tell the story they want to tell with Hulk, you know?
Right.
But those alters are still part of canon. They're all in there. And now... we've seen the establishment of a new alter in a different way. And it's not as simple as Hulk being driven around by Eldest in there. It's more complicated. Because, again, the Mother of Horrors' seed of corruption is in there, too. It's this kind of... In a way, Hulk has become like the father of horrors now with all these... Like, there's these different... It's this new combination of power sets, you know?
And going into Infernal Hulk, It almost feels like, correct me if I'm wrong, but this feels like sort of the thing that you've been heading towards this whole time. What does it feel like now that the shackle's off and you're heading into that book?
Oh, man. Yeah, we've been building up to the Age of Monsters this whole time. And, like, every Incredible Hulk up till now has just been putting all the pieces on the board. We've established all these different monsters. We've killed a ton of them, brought out a lot of fan-favorite characters. But it's all been leading up to this moment, and it's all been Act 1, you know? Like, and now Act 2 begins with Infernal Hulk number 1. The title change is just a reflection of the status quo change, you know?
Cool.
So this is the part where, up until now, Hulk has always been Banner's monster.
Mm-hmm.
Now Hulk is, like, all of our monster. Like, he's the monster of Earth. We're going to see in issue one, there's like one character in, like, a human mortal character in issue one that's very important, not just because of the role that he's going to be playing going forward, because he really illustrates how Hulk is now the monster that's been stalking Banner, now is stalking all of us, like the entire Marvel Universe.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
You have a bunch of other things going on, and I do want to touch on some of them. I'll start with one Pete I'm sure will be excited about. You're writing your first Punisher story in Punisher Black, White,
You're
and Blood number
it, Pete.
Three.
Yes.
What, that was a high five in case you couldn't hear it. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it's just a short story for now. I mean, I'd love to do more Punisher, but they're doing the Marvel's doing the Black, White, and Blood. I think the full title is Black, White, Blood, and Guts. And the third issue has my first Punisher story.
Wow.
And this unbelievable artist named Christian Rosato, who clearly prays at the throne of John Paul Leon. Like, it's very influenced by John Paul Leon, clearly. So good. I kind of wanted to write a story in which Punisher is like the shark of the movie. He's not like, we don't follow Punisher around.
Okay.
We follow the bad guys around.
And all right,
we
nice.
See Punisher from their perspective, like meaning like hardly at all.
Cool.
And so they're just like on the run from this terror that's you know hunting them. We see him for like a brief moment, but man, the art is so good. And I don't know. As we've seen Punisher kind of get co-opted by people who just are just into you know badass violent shit. Like, it's a guy that just has there's no consequences, no rules. He does whatever. That's so cool. He's not a hero. He's not even an anti-hero, you know? Like, Punisher is his own thing. And I did want to tell a story that gets a lot done with that concept, where he does a good thing, but, like, almost by accident. Like, it's 'cause he's like this violent force of nature in Hell's Kitchen. Man, I don't want to spoil it, but it's only a short story, but I'm so proud of it, and it's like it's kind of like my brief mission statement on what Punisher is and should be, you know?
Ooh, I like that.
I mean, I think you're touching on this anyway, but I did want to ask you, since you do have a military background, I'm sure you have a different take on the Punisher or view from the Punisher than perhaps other writers. This sounds like a very specific thing, but like, how does that affect your view towards him?
Honestly, Punisher is just so misunderstood, and people I admire will have like a Punisher sticker on their car, or wear a Punisher ball cap, or have, you know, whatever, and they just don't know what they're saying.
Right.
You know, like, they just think, well, that looks really hard and badass, it makes me feel a certain kind of way, and it, like, the way I feel about myself feels like it has a big fucking skull on my head, you know, like it just looks so cool and it fits my aesthetic, but they don't really understand what they're saying with that, you know? So that's all. Like, I mean, Punisher is a very clear kind of character. It's much like Hulk. It's brilliant in its simplicity. Right. And, I think there are very virtuous people out there that think the Punisher logo means something different than it does.
Yeah, agreed.
There's another Marvel book that you have coming up that was announced, which is Dungeons of Doom with Benjamin Percy. I'm sure there's not a lot you can talk about since it deals with the ramifications of one world under Doom, but what is it like working with Benjamin Percy on the book?
Ben's the man. Ben and I get along so well. We're dear friends. We have very similar aesthetics in a variety of ways. We read a lot of the same stuff. We love a lot of the same kind of horror films and comics. Ben's a huge horror fan. Ben has himself directed a horror film.
Oh,
like,
wow.
He's the biggest horror film fan I think I know. Well, second most. So he and I just love a lot of the same stuff. And we love a lot of the old comic horror anthologies, like Tales from the Crypt, Creepy and Eerie and all those.
Yeah, yeah.
Dungeons of Doom is just a miniseries for now, but I'd love it to go longer. Like, Dungeons of Doom is Tales from the Crypt, but Marvel.
Nice.
So, kind of spinning out of the events of the One World Under Doom thing, we're going to see all these different factions of different organizations. We're going to see U.S. Army Rangers, led by Red Hulk. We're going to see Hydra agents, this Wakandan super spy character named Umbra.
Nice.
Let's see, who else is down there? Squad of Latverian freedom fighters. And they're all kind of in or near one of Doom's strongholds. In this big crazy firefight, and Red Hulk is there. and there's this massive cave-in, and they find themselves, like the survivors, find themselves in these catacombs that nobody knew were there. Just corridors, an endless maze of corridors of things that Doom has either kept secret from the world because he wanted them, or he's protecting the world from the things in these dungeons. So they're all the characters are down there. They're down there for different reasons. They're trying to either kill each other, or they're trying to just get at, like, escape and get back to the surface, or they're looking for one specific thing. And as they're all kind of scrambling, they're just opening up doors, trying to find a way to the surface, and they keep finding more horrors down there that nobody knew existed.
Awesome.
Wow.
Let's flip it over to your DC work. You had a new issue of Batman and Robin come out, 26. This was a week ago, 2 weeks ago, something like that. I've lost track of time. But this feels like a very different arc than the previous arc. The very previous arc was like gothic and arch. You were introducing these new elements to mythology, and you're still doing that. But this also feels like your chance to kind of like play the hits, bring in the Penguin, bring in the bat villains. Was that kind of the goal there?
Yeah, man. The Memento arc, I mean, technically it was two arcs, but it felt like one like overarching story. That was like my bucket list Batman book. I really wanted to do the Memento thing. Nice. I love the idea of seeing Batman and Robin trying to solve the same crime over generations, you know, and then find through their mentor that it goes back even further generations than that, and like it felt like Batman to me in a really cool Gotham kind of way. This one, though, I wanted to really shift gears and introduce a new character that I call the Quiet Man, who's he's weirdly good at what he's doing. He's like a different version of Batman. Like if Crime Alley had happened to just a poor guy from the mountains with a car and a rifle, you know, instead of all the Wayne resources and Alfred Pennyworth and everyone else, all the resources and advantages that Batman had, even like just as God given intelligence and capabilities. What if this happened to us, you know, and we're just a guy and like we need justice for this crazy thing that happened. The Quiet Man kind of is that thing. And it's a way for Robin to kind of explore the things about himself and his dad that might be kind of busted, like ways that just kind of question the elements of what Batman and Robin are, and like, oh my God, are we this guy, or would we have been this guy if not for, you know, these other things? But it also is a cool chance to bring out some of the classic Gotham villains that I really love to show. There's one in particular that's about to return that I always love seeing on the page, like one that I used to love seeing in the animated series that I want to see on the page. So it's just a fun way to scratch one more itch, like just another kind of Gotham story that I really wanted to tell.
Yeah. Awesome. Speaking of scratching itches, you've also got Superman House of L, which has been a long time coming.
Thanks.
I mean, just to start off there, it must be good to finally have this in print coming out at a regular pace.
Yeah, man. I'm so proud of it. It's going to. So my first volume omnibus came out this year. And I mean, you could like jack up your car with it. Like it's so big. It's a beautiful book. They put so much love. Man, the people who do the collected volumes at DC are not screwing around. Like, they put so much love into this book and care.
It's impressive what they do there at DC.
So much back matter in that book. Like, there's, like, War Zoom languages and, like, maps and journal entries from Warworld and all this cool stuff.
That used to be a Bob Joyce job we've had in the show numerous times.
Oh, yeah?
He was in charge of, like, collections and stuff like that. He always did, like, really impressive stuff. It's awesome. I mean, when you go to a comic book shop and you're going to spend that kind of money, you really want to feel like you're getting a lot of great stuff in
totally.
There.
Yeah. I'm so proud of that volume. There's going to be a second volume, though, and the what I'm doing now on Book of L is going to cap off the end of my second omnibus. It'll be like one giant story that just begins the beginning and ends at the end, and like when people put it down, they're going to take a, hopefully, like big exhale, like, that was awesome, you know?
That's great. You can jack up two wheels on the car.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. The book has been great so far, and it really feels like, you kind of did this throughout, but it really feels like your mission statement on Superman, given that you're sending him to the far future, you're making him look at his history, what his legacy could be. I assume that is the intention
of
this
intention,
book.
That is the intention, yeah. Yeah, I want the whole thing to feel like just this consummate Superman story that deals with not just his time on Earth, but his time across the universe, and now his legacy for the future as well. Like, how his history ties in with the Kirbyverse, with, like, the fourth world, but also the origin, like, what was once the first world. And that all kind of comes together in House of El. And it also ties in with my work on Green Lantern War Journal. Like, it ties in very, for the For the hardcores that hang on every word, it even ties in with my Batman Robin a little bit.
Wow. Mm.
But it ties in hardcore with that with War Journal, because there's, if you guys, for people who read that series, John Stewart brings back his dead sister. Mm-hmm. It makes her like a sentient construct of the ring.
Wow. So
what's the ramification of that 1,000 years in the future? There's a, we're going to see, like in issue one at the end, we saw a little dude who's himself a sentient green character. He is one of the Lightborn, who are this whole race of things that once came from the ring and now are their own independent like race of beings.
That's cool.
We're going to see a lot of that explored in issues 4 and 5. Where do they call home? What is their legacy? How does it tie in with the super house? You know.
Awesome.
I wanted to ask you about one last thing, and this is like a little bit of a swerve, but last night I believe you were on the Remembering Peter David panel.
I was.
What was that like? How did that go?
Oh, it was cool. It was I didn't know Peter at all, but I know him by reputation. I know his work, of course. It was funny, there was a little snafu as far as who was going to be on the panel. So they already had 4 people like on the panel ready to go, and they had reached out via email and asked me to do it. And I said yes, of course. It made sense as the Hulk guy now to be on
sure.
that panel. So
yeah.
I figured someone else could make it or something, but I showed up. And I walk in with Ron Mars, who's also on it.
Oh, yeah.
And Ron's a dear friend. And
he's awesome.
And he knew Peter David super well. They wrote the Marvel versus DC amalgam mm-hmm. stuff together back in the day. So we walk into a room, and all 4 of those people are still up there. And it's a small table. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be on this thing. So we were all kind of looking around with question marks over our heads, like, oh, there's so many people. So I was like, I'm just going to sit and watch. So I sat in third row and watched the panel.
Oh, okay.
But then at a certain point, I think the moderator, I think, felt bad, which wasn't her fault at all, but she felt bad that I was just sitting there. She was like, halfway through, I was, full disclosure, I was starting to nod off a little bit because I'd been on the floor all day. And I was like, she was like, Philip, like, thanks so much for coming. And, you know, I wondered if you had anything to add. Would you want to talk about whatever? And I was like, she literally woke me up when she asked me that question. I was like, oh, shit, what's happening?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so that's what happened. Somebody else jumped up and gave me their chair. I was like, crap, I got to talk about this now. But it actually ended up being kind of fun. So there weren't enough chairs for all of us, so we kind of rotated a little bit, and we all talked, and it was fun to hear all the different perspectives on Peter and his work. And my perspective on, as the Hulk writer, man, I mean, David was on Hulk for like 12 years or something crazy. Yeah. Like, that doesn't really happen anymore. And for someone to have that kind of a footprint on Hulk's mythos, even though I mean, whenever people ask me for my favorite Hulk books, the ones I typically go to are the Greg Pak run that did, mm-hmm. Encompassed like Planet Hulk.
Oh yeah,
and Immortal. Those are the ones that I was reading even way before any of this was a thing. But there are specific Peter David moments that really matter. And even if that was not the case, even if I did not like the Peter David stuff, it would be impossible to write Hulk and not be playing with toys that he built. You know, like he just...
Sure.
Usually you get somebody on a book. If somebody wants to make a big swing or make a name for themselves, they'll go onto a book and make huge sweeping, you know, changes, kind of cement their legacy, or just be like, here's my statement. It's way different than the other ones. I mean, David kind of did that to himself over and over. Like he was on the book so long, he would make these massive changes to status quo and then just keep rolling with it. Like he would make change after change after change after change. Yeah. His ideas were just so bold. And you have to respect that. Even if you're like, whether or not you are a fan, anybody has to respect how big his swings were and just how many he took over the course of his monumental Hulk run. So basically that's more or less what I said. Like, just nobody's ever going to write Hulk again and not be playing in the same canon that Peter David built.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was, we had him on the show a couple times. Super nice, very passionate,
for
very
sure.
knowledgeable. You know, he wrote us an email afterwards. Like, it was, you know, you could tell he was a writer through and through.
Man, someone was about to tell this. So someone asked for, like, salty Peter David stories.
Uh-huh.
And nobody told this one, but there's one I really wish they told. It's not the whole story, but basically Peter and another writer had... I thought of this because what you said about his passion, and that is absolutely true. He just loved comics from the beginning to the end. He just was a huge, he remained a fan the whole time. And not everyone does. Like, sometimes people get kind of burnt out, or they turn to other things. But Peter was a fanboy till the end, you know? And that is, that was made clear in this one story where Peter and this other writer were on the train to go somewhere, and Peter was just constantly talking about comics until his friend pretended to be asleep, and some other rando on the train saw him reading comics, reading like a big graphic novel thing, and he was reading his own work, just because he loved it. He just had so much fun in Hulk, yeah. And this lady made the mistake of asking what this was. Mm-hmm. And reportedly, he read the whole thing to her on the train.
Wow, my God.
Just, like, read the
that, I could see that. Just, I could definitely
again,
see
he's
that.
Just this, like, this big kid that was so excited to be a part of this, you know? And that's I thought that summed up Peter pretty well.
Man. That is awesome. Thank you for sharing. I know we've talked through a lot of books. Is there anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, anything you want to plug? Anything you want to talk about?
There's other stuff coming. I'm not sure what I can talk about. I'm glad you mentioned the Punisher thing. I just announced that myself. Let's see. I do have a creator-owned book coming out next year that I'm really excited about.
What can you tell us?
Let's see. Nothing? It's so
just
early.
That it's coming?
It's, God, what can I tell you? I mean, it's kind of a war story.
Okay.
But not the kind, but also with vibes of like Mike Mignola, kind of. It's not just a war story. It's a war story with supernatural elements, with like some really fun, whimsical kind of adventure to it, and man, I just love it. I can't wait for you to see it. I wish I could tell you more, but I should wait till there's a proper announcement.
Sure. Yeah, we don't want to get you in trouble.
I'm actually going to be hitting up one of the artists at this con, see if I can get them on board to draw this thing.
All right, process of elimination. We're going to figure it out now.
You'll get to it, yeah.
There's only 100 writers here.
Yeah. Let's see. What else can I tell you? I know what my next big book is going to be. My next big two ongoing series. And I am friggin' over the moon about it. Pete, you're going to crap yourself.
Oh, man, I love it. I think it was maybe last year or 2 years ago when you were like, oh, man, I can't wait for you to read the Hulk stuff. And you were so right.
Good, man.
It was it was so cool. I cannot wait, man. Thank you so much for your work.
Dude, of course. It's always a pleasure to see you guys.
It's an honor to read it and be able to interview you and talk to you. Just thanks, man.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
People really appreciate it.
Thanks, brother.